3 days on plastic and stainless steel. It can, but the details are a bit more complicated, according to scientists who published the research behind the figures last Thursday. The short version is that the levels of the virus dropped dramatically within a few hours, the authors wrote in the New England Journal of Medicine article. The key is what scientists refer to as virus half-life, or rate of decay. How much time it takes for half of the microbes in a given sample to die or become non-infectious. When the scientists placed a virus-laden droplet on plastic, they found that half of the virus was gone after about 7 hours. Half of what remained was gone after another 7 hours, and so on and so on. By the end of day two, there was less than 1/100th of the original amount, and after 3 days, the remnants were barely detectable. For stainless steel, the half-life for virus was about 5 or 6 hours, and for cardboard, it was even shorter, less than 4 hours. The surface on which the virus had the shortest duration was copper, which has long been known for its antimicrobial properties. When droplets were placed on the reddish metal, half of the viruses died off within 45 minutes. So, what matters is how much virus there is. To begin with, Princeton University researcher Dylan H. Morris, one of the study's authors, the more viruses deposited on a surface, the greater the amount that will be left when half of them have decayed. Let me drop for a second. Why the coronavirus and most other viruses have no independent time when all of the viruses become undetectable is because if researchers used bigger or smaller droplets, they would have detected some viruses remaining on the plastic after more than 3 days, in theory. Quote, the absolute time until the virus is undetectable depends upon how much virus you initially put there, end quote, said Morris, a PhD candidate in ecology and evolutionary biology. The findings should offer some assurance to those concerned about touching their mail, said Gregory A. Poland, a vaccine researcher at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, who was not involved with that study. Generally, the smaller the exposure to a virus, the less likely it will develop into a full-blown infection. And when a virus is exposed to sunlight and warmer temperatures, as may be likely with mail, it's likely to decay even faster than the scientists found in their indoor experiment. The fact that you could identify a virus on a surface does not necessarily mean it is infectious, he said. Still, it can't hurt to wash your hands after taking groceries out of the bag, opening a newly delivered envelope, or retrieving the newspaper. Soap and water do the job. Morris and his fellow researchers also compared the viability of the new coronavirus on various surfaces with that of the different kinds of coronaviruses, like the one that caused SARS epidemic in 2002 and 2003. The results were similar, though the SARS virus decayed more quickly than the new virus did on cardboard. The research team, which also includes members from the National Institute of Health and U.S. Center of Disease Control and Prevention and the UCLA, plans a more comprehensive follow-up study analyzing the hardiness of the new coronavirus at varying levels of temperature and humidity, as well as comparing it with the common flu. The goal of the first paper was speed, given the rapid growth of the outbreak, Morris said. For this paper, we wanted to just move as fast as we could while still getting reliable data. We knew people needed to know this for these types of things for hospital and environmental safety models. Let me drop for any questions or comments about this particular article. This is AC2GS. Okay, on with the next. A company that uses internet-connected thermometers to predict the spread of the flu says it is tracking the coronavirus in real time, something that had been impossible given the lack of testing for the disease. Kinza Health has sold or given away more than 1 million smart thermometers to households in which 2 million people reside almost as soon as consumers experience them. For the last few years, Kinza's influenza around the United States about 2 weeks before the Center for Disease Control and Prevention's own surveillance tool, the tracker, is what this thing said. Inder Singh, the company's founder, the CDC's system lags behind the device from hundreds of doctors' offices to the patients. Medical experts were enthusiastic about the possibility that smart thermometers could be used to track the virus. Having millions of data points allows instant showing spikes here. The most common symptom of the infection with the virus is fever. About 90% of patients suffer from it, but the World Health Organization, College of Medicine in Houston, said if this tells you where there are new major clusters of fever, it tells you this for your next blood test. Areas that are the illness caused by the coronavirus, but the data also points to spots in Florida, Michigan, Arizona, and eastern Texas, where not as many cases have been reported as yet. Just last Saturday, Kinsey's data indicated an unusual rise in fevers in South Florida, even though it was not known to be a COVID-19 epicenter. Within days, testing showed that South Florida had indeed become an epicenter. Quote, we can't say for sure that these anomalous fever spikes are COVID-19, but we believe this is the earliest signal of where it's occurring, Mr. Singh said. Normally, Mr. Singh said, the company submits its data to peer-reviewed medical journals, but because of the national emergency, it will post its maps and data Friday on MedRxiv on an online respiratory repository of medical articles. The latest data is actually available on their new website, which is www.healthweather.us. We are nervous about putting this out there because we built it so fast, said Mr. Singh, a former executive at the Clinton Health Access Initiative, which gets medicine to the poor. Quote, but we think this would be super helpful even without peer review, and we think that there's a moral imperative to do it right now so everyone can see it and judge it, Mr. Singh added. Asked for comment about Kinsey's proposal, a CDC spokesperson said the agency is not working directly with this particular company, but appreciates the efforts of so many private sector companies to address this new threat. Dr. Nirav Shah, a former New York State Health Commissioner who is an advisor to Kinsey, said that the real-time fever data could speed up public health the way Twitter speeds up the news cycle. Demand for Kinsey's smart thermometers has skyrocketed since the coronavirus pandemic began, Mr. Singh said, and the company is now selling 10,000 a day, which is creating a production problem, but also multiplying the amount of data coming in each day. Let me drop for a sec. The thermometers connect to the cell phone app that instantly transmits their readings to the company. Users can also enter other symptoms they feel. The app then gives them general advice on when to seek medical attention. Temperature readings have been far more timely and accurate than other rapid measurements, such as cough medicine sales, electronic medical records, or Google searches for flu, Dr. Shaw said. Because influenza usually produces higher and more protracted fevers than common colds do, the company's software estimates which zip code appears to be hit by flu rather than by other mild cold viruses. For a few months now, Kinsey has worked with Benjamin Dilsel, a disease modeler at Oregon State University who uses electronic medical records, CDC influenza surveillance network, and other data maps the way the flu season historically rises and falls across the country. The company's thermometer readings are by far the most high-quality data set I've ever worked with, Dr. Dezel said. Our results suggest that we can now accurately forecast flu out 12 weeks or more. Kinsey's maps accurately detected this season's early start in the deep south and its unusual midwinter double peak, and did so about 2 weeks before these signs appeared in the CDC's flu view. In a conference call with reporters, Dr. Dezel and Kinsey's senior data scientist, Sam Chamberlain, showed twin maps overlaying one another, the first showing where the flu season currently is, and another showing zip codes where high fevers are two or three times as common as they ought to be, according to the flu model. For a sanity check on our data, we compared this to what happened in Houston back when flu season began. Dr. Chamberlain said, on that chart, a spike of green data points appeared, rising to twice the height recorded in typical seasons. That marked the early unusual outbreak of B-strain influenza that hit Louisiana and Texas in November. The current flu season in Brooklyn is waning as winter ends, beginning on February 24th. However, another spike of fevers began to grow out of the downward slope of the normal flu recording. Quote, we can't say that this is, can't say what it is, but it's very different from what we'd normally expect, Dr. Chamberlain said. This is where local health departments might want to direct its testing, Dr. Daziel added. Let me drop for any questions or comments about this particular news item. I am AC2 Chia.
JG2RY.
Yes, David.
I think this news item, it didn't really add up to very much for me, and it didn't really give me any useful information. I'm not sure what it was all about, so maybe in your words you can explain it in simpler terms.
In simpler terms, different agencies are given the job of trying to find out where clusters of infection are taking place. The standard method that the CDC has used for the last 50 years is the submission of this report by hospitals, doctors, and other health facilities, and that's how they correlate their data. This is sort of 21st century cell phone app type of thing going on, where individuals either get free or purchase a temperature monitoring device that not only records their temperature whenever they test it locally, but after approving it when you install the software, they dump the data to a company that made all the equipment. By mapping the temperatures and the areas of fever and the shape of the fever curve that it gets as output, they posit that they have more timely information for places like the CDC of where future outbreaks will erupt. And as an example, they gave South Florida that had been, up until the time they reviewed their maps, not been considered a high-risk group for the COVID-19 virus, but a few days later did. So this is another method of monitoring the infection by a nationwide in real time. And more information is always better than less information.
Thank you, Dr. Roy. KG2RY.
Okay, very good, David. Those are basically the general articles I wanted to share with you because I thought that they were pertinent to the problems at hand. I'll now just unfortunately give you the numbers as of about an hour ago because they change minute to minute. The last time I checked the statistics, there was about 335,403 detected cases spread over 192 countries and territories. There were 14,611 reported deaths related to this virus. The World Health Organization still kind of believes that the COVID-19 virus's mortality rate is 3.4, but that's a figure that they published March 3rd, and they haven't updated it to my knowledge. The rate of infections has apparently slowed down in China, if you want to believe them. According to them, they only had 41 new cases in the past 24 hours. The country with the second highest reported infection count is still Italy, with a count of 59,138, with 5,476 deaths related to this virus, and with an announced new death rate of 133 additional new deaths from the virus in the past day. Here in the USA, we have had 32,783 cases and 416 deaths. Now, just keep in mind that last time this week, instead of 32,783 cases, there were only 3,533 cases, and there were only 63 deaths at that point rather than the 416 that there are now. New York State, unfortunately, has almost half of these cases at this point, with counting 15,168 cases with 114 deaths. Part of our accelerated infection number is most likely due to the fact that we're actually accelerated the testing of the viruses. We've gone from, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 to over 100,000 tests. And so I think that's what's giving us these enormous increases in such a short interval of time. And keep in mind that we still have less absolute number of viral tests as Canada, United Emirates, Germany, Italy, and South Korea. So that's the situation right now. And some of you guys may have heard about chloroquine. Hydroxychloroquine is a treatment for malaria. There is some anecdotal suggestion that it might be of some use. It is not approved for the use by FDA. There are no studies that demonstrate efficacy. And so it's one of the many things that scientists are going to work on. Also, we talked last week of
repeater timeout. Repeater timeout. Cancel.
Okay, just missed that one. We talked about vaccines. They have streamlined regulations for vaccines. Usually vaccines have to go through an animal safety testing before human beings are exposed because sometimes the cure is worse than the disease. They skipped that one and they went directly to human testing. The National Institute of Health is funding the trials taking place at Kaiser Permanente Research Facility in Seattle. Testing will begin with 45 young, healthy volunteers with different dosages of shots co-developed by the NIH and Moderna Incorporated. Public health officials still say it will take a year to 18 months to fully validate any potential vaccine. And one of the benefits of this vaccine that they're going to be testing is that it's rather quick turnaround. It's what we see the genetic pattern. One sec. Let me pause for a sec. Okay, I'm not quite sure if my signal, now my signal looks good. I'm looking at the signal and sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. Anyway, this vaccination method is very new, and its major benefit is that it has a rapid turnaround. So you plug in the genetic code, which the Chinese already analyzed and shared with the world back in late January, and you can get out a possible vaccine. The only problem with this technique is that no one has actually developed a vaccine using it that demonstrated any effectiveness. So that's a problem. But there are at least 20 different vaccines across the world that are planning to gear up for testing. Antivirals can take time. The antivirals for, say, HIV took 10 years to develop, and they're still working on a vaccine and haven't gotten it yet. So, if we're very, very lucky, a year and a half, 2 years, what have you. But for the time being, it's kind of hitting the brake on society and economics and social distancing. Anyway, that's my little summary of COVID-19 today. So if anyone wants to ask any general, non-specific questions, please feel free.
JD2NVB.
Yes, Bob.
Yes, Roy. I noticed you mentioned in the first, not the first story, the last, the story about the thermometers online, that they identified South Florida as I forgot the word, an area where they think there are a lot of cases. That kind of shoots holes in the theory that it might improve with warm weather, does it not? Back to you, Roy.
Well, Bob, there's even, unfortunately, worse evidence for that. If you check, although Australia is not terribly heavily hit, you'll keep in mind that in Australia, it's the summertime.
Yes, I thought of that too earlier. I could have mentioned that as well. I didn't know how many were there, but I know there are cases there as well. Okay, yeah, for now, that's all I have. Back to Ned.
Okay, Bob. I mean, it's possible that there's a seasonality. When people kind of mention that, they're really alluding to previous experiences that epidemiologists and doctors in general have had, especially with things like the influenza virus. SARS, the sudden acute respiratory syndrome that was caused by coronavirus in 2002 and 2003 seemed to have a seasonal effect. But MERS, the Middle Eastern respiratory syndrome, did not really seem to have a seasonal effect. So we're not 100% sure whether this particular virus is going to do anything different when things warm up. I certainly hope they do. But unfortunately, and I don't want to be a spoil sport, the great influenza pandemic of 1917 to 1920 had a seasonal dip. It spread across Europe and the United States and killed many people. And then it came the springtime, and it decreased and almost disappeared, only to come back even worse in the fall and kill more people. So we might be spared some time that we'll be spending doing things to hopefully improve our immunostatus and such. So that's what I got to say about that. Anyone with any other questions about this topic?
KG2R1.
Yes, David.
Roy, I was watching on TV yesterday the press conference with the president and a bunch of other people. They were talking about the best thing that you can do if you're over 60 years old and you have a non-essential job is to stay home. What do you? What is your take on that?
I completely agree. I think that in general, if you do not have a non-essential job and you're any age, you should stay home for the most part. I mean, it's not like it is in China where squads of people will come by and weld you into your, weld the door frame locked so that you're stuck inside. You can, if you have a dog, you know, you want to walk the dog, if you want to take a stroll around the block, as long as you maintain social distancing. But I would suggest that for anyone of any age, because one of the faulty aspects of people's conception of this is although younger people have a less of a risk of dying, they don't necessarily have that much of a less risk of complications that are not fun to have. There are people in the hospital with respiratory problems who are in their 30s and their 40s. So it's just that when you get to 60 and then 70 and then certainly 80, the risk of once you get to that point of respiratory failure leading quickly to death is much higher for those people. But you also have to concern yourself that young people think that they're going to live forever. They haven't lived long enough to realize that that isn't quite true. And they can become silent carriers for this and bring it back to their family. And they may not suffer dearly, but their parents and or their grandparents might suffer terribly.
Well, QSL Roy, thank you very much. Yeah, people were talking about that. If you're not at risk or if you probably wouldn't suffer too much, you know, you could also be a carrier. You can give it to other people who would be at much bigger risk. Mike, back to you, KG2RY.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Okay, just one other question. During today's news conference, they said out of 10 people being tested, one would be positive. But yet then he said out of everybody they tested, 50% was positive. Do you agree with that, or wonder if you could make any sense out of that. Back to you, Roy.
Well, Paul, it sort of depends upon the population that you select to test. If you're going to test people in respiratory failure around this time, you're going to have a much higher rate of testing positive. If you, on the other end of the spectrum, just randomly select people, a relatively low sampling rate. So it unfortunately depends upon your the population that you're checking. The ratios change accordingly.
Okay, so both statements could be true. All right, we'll take the average then. But okay, I'll let you continue on. You got a little noisy intermittently there. I think you can see that on your meter. But you're okay. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good, Paul. Yeah, unfortunately, as I've mentioned before, that the really good numbers will not come out for another year or two. 20/20 hindsight is excellent vision, but it's always looking back. So we got to do as best we can with the present understanding of what's going on, and we have to sort of understand that we're kind of traveling through something that hasn't quite hit us yet. We sort of think that we've been hit, but we're sort of in the eye of the hurricane, and especially in New York City. The next few weeks are going to be a bumpy ride. I don't want to depress anyone. I don't want to panic anyone. I just want them to understand what's going on and not try and poo-poo it and think that it's been around for 10 years and we just didn't know about it and it's not as... It's just as bad as influenza. It's not any worse. I've heard some interesting things on the radio lately that kind of depressed me about the human race, but that's another story. Anyone with any other further questions on this topic, please feel free. Yes, what's your question?
I came late to this conversation tonight, so I hope I don't repeat any question, but I have two questions. Do we know any situations of reinfection of a person who has later down the road contracted it again? Or if a person who had COVID-19 from the L type can be infected by the S type of the virus?
Okay. Well, again, this is all preliminary stuff because scientists are busy treating people and coming up with, you know, either an antiviral or a vaccine or something else, and so they haven't really spent that much time testing. Theoretically, there's no indication that once you are infected with this coronavirus, you can get it again. There was a spurious report of a Japanese woman who tested positive for shedding virus, then a second test that showed no virus, then a third that showed virus, and they were worried that she had become reinfected. What it turned out to simply be was the second of the three negatives. The negative one was erroneous. You know, there are false positives and false negatives. So as far as we understand it at this point, if you are exposed and you go through the infection, you will have your own immunity to it. As far as the question of whether immunity to another type of coronavirus, it sort of, I guess, ultimately depends on the coronavirus. It's a class of viruses that usually do not affect human beings. This class of viruses tends to live in wild animals, snakes, bats, things like that. And only when it mutates can it get a toehold in the human immune system and attack us. So other than MERS and SARS, those are the other coronaviruses that human beings have had to deal with. They haven't done any real studies to see if there's any cross-immunity between those, though. Oh, did that answer the question?
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Welcome. Anyone else with any general questions on this topic, please feel free.
2-0-1.
What's your question? Someone had a question?
This is KC2ZOR. I was asking about diet. I hear a lot of commentary about the Mediterranean diet, eating fruits, vegetables, and nuts. And I wanted to know what your opinion of that in holding off the virus would be. Back to you.
Okay, I mean, it's purely conjecture on my part because no one has done any dietary studies for this virus. My sensibility is that it's not going to make that much of a difference. There is no particular diet that I'm aware of that improves immunofunctioning in the human body. It's just the boring, regular stuff of three regular meals, three square meals a day, good night's rest, and as little stress, a little exercise, just simple things that your mother told you. So I don't think there's a panacea in a particular variation of diet. A well-balanced diet is always a good idea than some kind of strange little mono diet. There was some person in England who decided that they were going to experiment on themselves and just lived on potato chips for a year or two. That didn't end terribly well. But a well-balanced diet in general is always a wise thing. Whether a Mediterranean diet gives you any additional benefit to fight off the infection, I think has been unproven and subject to further research.
Well, thank you very much. And I I certainly wouldn't eat potato chips for a year. Thank you very much.
Roy, M2EO, could I be allowed in here tonight considering what's going on?
It's okay with me, Rich. If it's okay with you, just you know what to do. You've been a ham for many, many, many years, and tell me what your question or what you want to say.
Oh, thank you, Roy. Yes, I've been a ham since I'm 15 years old. I'll be turning 70 next month, so I'm not giving it up. But I wanted to know, I believe I'm at high risk. I'll be 70. I don't know if my immune system is compromised. It's inactive. I picked it up in a attendant's coming in here to take care of me because I'm disabled. They're all wearing masks. I wash my hands frequently, and once a day I take my temperature. This is what I was told to do. Can you add anything to what I just said?
Not really, Rich. Again, there's no prophylaxis, unfortunately. Be very, very cautious and careful and make sure that your homemade agency is screening people aggressively. Unfortunately, that might be a bit of a weak link. They're at very high risk to become infected themselves and to carry it from one client to another. So you have to have eternal vigilance, if you will. Unfortunately, you're basically immunocompromised on many different levels. I'm just kind of extrapolating. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, a cardiovascular disease, there's a bunch of things, diabetes and other such, and having MRSA. All those things kind of bespeak being immunocompromised. So you definitely, absolutely, positively don't want to get this virus, if anyone had any kind of a judgment one way or the other. So, try to, you can't really distance yourself. You're kind of stuck with your home aides and hope that the agency is vigilant and keep everything as disinfected as humanly possible, and clean your hands and make sure that you don't put your hands on your face and such. Just keep them at your side. Hope for the best, I guess.
table down here with some Windex and a cloth. That will help. I plan to do that tonight. And other than that, I guess I don't have much help. It's a new agency I'm with. The old agency was awful in every respect. I have a very good agency now. They told me that if any of their aides come down with a fever, a dry cough, I forget what else they said, they're gonna remove them early. So it's a very good agency. It's a difference. Yeah, I'm having trouble holding the mic button. The difference between the old agency and the new agency is like day and night.
Okay, there's something going on wonky with the repeater. I wish you well, Rich. I hope you're the best. It's a little scary out there, but, you know, hope for the best and think happy thoughts, and we'll all get through this mess.
Yes, I know. I read there's a lot of price gouging. I read on the internet that respirators, which were going for $16,000, are now going for $40,000. Face masks, which the government used to pay 65 cents for, are going for $7 now. What do you think of that, Roy?
I think it's terrible. I think hopefully some of these guys will get into deep trouble. There was a gentleman who bought up all the hand sanitizers in someplace down south, and basically the court took all of it away from them and gave it to the local neighborhood. There have always been profiteers of war, profiteers of hardship, pandemic, plague, and there always will be. It's part of humanity, unfortunately, and hopefully they'll get their comeuppance down the road. But respirators, ventilators are very problematic. We do not have excessive numbers over the last 10, 20 years. We have downsized medical facilities in order to maximize profits and minimize costs. And that works fine if you can predict accurately the future. But if you can't, then the fertilizer hits the fan. And one of them is excess respirators, ventilators. You not only need the machine, you need the area of space to park them because they take up some space. And you also need a respiratory therapist because they're incredibly confusing to control. You know, they make the a ham radio seem like a piece of cake. So there's going to be problems like that. There's going to be people who are trying to make a buck out of anything, any disaster. So that's human nature.
Yes, unfortunately so, boy. It's not only the virus that scares me. Gun stores, I read, in upstate New York, people were lining up outside. There's a run on guns. Also, I read something, what's it called now? The, something Production Act they want to invoke, some people in Washington. And it's supposed to be an emergency times. I believe it had its basis in World War II. Something Production Act, which would allow the government to stop the price gouging by nationalizing these companies. Did you hear that?
Yes, Rich. It's called the Defense Production Act. It was put in place by Truman for the Korean War because there were problems getting enough aluminum and magnesium and steel. So it basically nationalizes control of major manufacturers and forces them to manufacture what you want them to manufacture. So you enact it and you arrange for a lot of machinery that builds respirators, and you tell them you're going to build respirators now, and that's what they do. The president said that he was going to enact the Defense Production Act, and then he decided not to. He signed a executive order not enacting it, but to kind of arm it so that I believe his House and the Human Resources Secretary Azar was given power to implement the Defense Production Act at some time in the future. He's sort of waiting for it to get worse, I guess.
Yes. By the way, a very, very conservative Republican who recently called the hoax, Ron Paul, has the virus now.
I don't know. I don't want to suggest that there's karma in the world, but, I have heard people just this morning. I run a 10-meter net as well as these technical nets, and guys who were just telling me that, it's just overkill. It's just the flu. Well, I guess it's the flu. If the flu was anywhere from 5 to 45 times more deadly, which again doesn't strike me as a thing to calm me down and make me kind of just sit around and do nothing. But it takes all kinds. I haven't heard him since he announced that he's infected. If he changed his mind, if he still doesn't kind of think it's just a trick, I don't know.
I'm going by what I read on Yahoo News. I'm very concerned about panicky. People don't have to go crazy. And that's a fear. Also, some hate groups, neo-Nazis, are saying that people should go out and kill the police and Jews. That's really nice, isn't it?
Well, you have to understand that there's a certain percentage of raving lunatics out there. Some, and especially in the old days, were institutionalized, but now they're in outpatient facilities, and they skip those facilities, so there's a lot of crazy people out there, and I'm sort of surprised I haven't heard from anyone yet tonight on that frequency. You have to take it a bit with a grain of salt. People kind of blame the Jews. During the plague, they blamed the Jews. Eventually someone's going to blame the Jews. It's part of a tradition, apparently, with some people. But you have to fight the sense of panic. Panic doesn't lead to anything useful. Panic leads to irrational actions that make no sense and are almost always counterproductive. You have to be concerned, you have to be aware, and you have to be informed. And one of the things that I'm trying to do as best I can is to inform people in a somewhat thoughtful way, I hope, free of any kind of strangeness. In addition to those members out there of LimeWalk, if you look at your e-log, our president, Rich, K2KNB, asked me if I would write an article, a general article, about viruses, what they are, what they do, why they are, and other things. So it's an overview. It doesn't really touch upon the coronavirus, because I didn't know when it was going to be published, but it's out. And if anyone that doesn't get the e-log from LimeWalk and they want a copy, they can email me. Just address it to roy@ac2gs.com, and I'll send you a copy of that article.
It's doing a great job.
Question?
Thank you, Dr. Roy. A very interesting and useful information.
Question in one YDY.
Sorry about that, dear. Anyway, Rich, you wanted to say something else?
No, not really. I'll leave you with this thought. I'm a World War II history buff. And the Hiroshima, 178,000 people died from the nuclear blast in Hiroshima. The first time it was ever used. More people have died to date than the people in Hiroshima. And that's all I have to say. Think about that, fellas.
Go away!
Okay, Rich. I mean, in general, we should not discount anyone who dies. Life is a precious commodity, and very quickly it easily snuffed out. I am sure that the people who designed the atom bomb had a great weight in their heart for the rest of their lives. People have written books about the subject. It's different when a virus comes out of the wild and bites you on the backside and someone says, you know, drop the bomb, kill the people. It was necessary. It was a war. I understand lives were saved, lives were traded, and I understand that. It's just unfortunate that humanity needs that way of settling disputes.
Question in one way, anyway.
I'm done, boy. I'm just still listening. Thank you for letting me in here. Pick up N1YDY, if you will. N3O clear. I'll just be listening.
Very good, Rich. Hank, yes, you wanted to say something or ask something?
Well, I wanted to ask, without getting into medical issues, I could say that I spend 2 days a week in an infusion center. I'm wondering if my chances of picking this disease or this virus up are higher when I'm in a place that has a bunch of immunocompromised individuals.
Well, it's difficult. You put a random group of people together, it inherently increases your risk. If the powers that be that arrange all these things are competent, it hopefully lowers that degree of increase because these are incredibly high-risk people. So what they should want to do is scrupulously isolate this area from any random bunch of people wandering in and out or sideways. So, although I think that unfortunately it is an increase in risk, it to a degree can be manageable and made less so.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome, Hank. Anyone else with any questions on this topic, please feel free.
And to our remake.
What are your question or your comment?
I have a question. Like, you know, they say it's going to take about a year to get a vaccine in, but with them using the drugs for, like, a malaria or with Ebola, you think by the summer, like 6 months from now, this thing will be handled enough that we can go back to our normal lives? You know, I mean, this really messed everything up. Back to you.
Well, unfortunately, you know, I mean, it depends if you're terribly optimistic or terribly pessimistic. My gut sense is that it's going to be with us in one form or another for over a year. You mentioned two different antiviral possibles. Again, one of them is hydroxychloroquine. It's a well-known medication for malaria infection. Malaria is not anything like the coronavirus. It is... the coronavirus is a virus that has an RNA strip inside that gets absorbed into the body's cells and then reproduces using the cell's mechanism. Malaria is a single-cell parasite, so not that a lot in common. There is anecdotal stories that it might improve to a degree someone's course, but those are highly undocumented, somewhat dubious. There will be research, and if we're incredibly lucky and they find it to work miraculously, there still probably isn't enough of it, so they have to gear up to massively produce it. And then, unfortunately, it also has side effects. It can produce heart rhythm disturbances, and so we have to figure out whether it's more helpful than it is harmful. So that's the hydroxychloroquine. The other one that you mentioned is the anti-Ebola antiviral. The problem with that is that my understanding is that that was one of the first things that the Chinese tried. The benefit was apparently that it didn't kill anyone, but the problem was that it didn't really help anyone. Antivirals are somewhat viral specific. They attack virus replication in a specific way. There's very few to none broad spectrum antiviral agents like there are antibiotics, unfortunately. So sometimes you have to actually design from scratch a molecule to act as an antiviral for a given type of a virus. And as I mentioned before, it took us a good 10 years to do it with HIV. And hopefully we've learned a lot of things since then, and we can collapse the time. But I can't tell you how long it's going to take. Getting back to vaccines, people see that the influenza vaccines are different every year, and they think, it takes a couple hours and you build one up. We're still working on an HIV vaccine, so, and that's, 20 years, 30 years, so that's not good. So it depends upon the virus, it depends upon our luck, it depends upon how quickly we can zip things through. It's probably, best case scenario, still going to be a year, year and a half before we have a
repeater. Timeout.
Taken up by the OIT. So, I mean, could we be sitting here like a year from now, still at home at 100%? I mean, I don't.
Repeater. Timeout. Cancel.
Community college, can't go in. I do OIT, but I fix computers. How much can I do? People are working from home, they're using home devices. It's not much they could do, really. Maybe they can help me with the help desk. But it's not much they could really do. I'm going to be just sitting here tomorrow, and my supervisor will call me on my cell and take it from there.
Yeah, I understand. It's tough for most people, and it'll get unfortunately tougher in the next few weeks. I'm not terribly optimistic locally on the course of the virus and the state of local medical facilities here in the next few weeks. If it makes you feel any better, most likely these shutdowns are not going to be long-term, but they might be cyclical. In other words, what might end up happening down the road is they call for social distancing for X number of weeks or months, and then they open businesses back up, and you can go out and hopefully pick the pieces of business and jobs back, and then they might hit the brakes, they might tap the brakes a few times down the road in the next 6 to 12 months. So this is going to be the big hitting the brake time. We might have to experience less aggressive measures over the long haul. So this is about as bad as it's going to get as far as social distancing and shutting down the economy, if that makes you feel any better.
Roger, I mean, to worry about, our invading forces from other countries invading us and be overrun, but this is like a worldwide thing. We're in a war now. So, I was supposed to go on a cruise in October. That's not happening, obviously. I was supposed to, out of Barcelona, Spain, Mediterranean cruise, and all the cities I was going to go to was really bad, like Rome, Venice, Naples. I was going to go, especially on a ship, forget it. taxi went to RBV Friday.
AC2GS. Well, again, I totally, utterly understand that this is impacting all, pretty much everyone that I know's life. I don't know of anyone who's living so deep under a rock somewhere that this is not affecting. I'm sorry that it's screwed with your plans, and, you know, I mean, there are going to be repercussions. There are going to be echoes from this going down into the history books for a long, long, long time. Because, you know, once you take the foot off the brake, that doesn't necessarily mean the economy will just keep chugging along. There's only so many times you could strangle a person before you can't revive them anymore. So, you know, again, it's going to get worse before it gets better, but for the most part, most of us will get through it. We'll have war stories. I mean, I hate to remind people, you know, anyone growing up a certain age heard about the Depression from their parents and their aunts and uncles and their friends and such, and it left an imprint on them, and I think that this is going to leave an imprint on us all. Either make us better or worse people, I don't know, but that's life. You know, again, the 1917-1920 pandemic kicked the heck out of the world. It was a worldwide phenomenon. It's not like it never happened before. It's not like it'll never happen again. You gotta respect nature, because if you don't respect nature, it'll kick your ass.
Yeah, Roger on that. Yeah. So, well, since I'm going to be home, I think I have to get my FEMA classes under my belt so I could do emergency communication. But even without it, if we have to get activated, don't use anybody if they can. I have an antenna on my roof of my house, 30 feet up in the air, 2 meters. I got a dipole on HF, so I'm pretty much prepared if we are needed to help out with amateur radio.
Okay, that's very good to hear, and I urge everyone who is not working because they shut down their facility to try as best you can to make productive use of your time at home. There's all kinds of learning programs and websites, and most of them are free, and some of them are nominal. You can learn a lot of things at home and make this a completely not a worthless experience. You know, learn a new craft, get a new hobby. You know, there's things to be done. Don't just sit there and worry, because again, that just makes everything worse. You know, don't disregard what's going on, but don't just waste your time worrying about it.
Roger. Well, what I'm going to do for my productive time, I'm going to work on the FEMA classes, you know, IC 100, 200, 700, 800. I'm going to work on this week and see if I can get them under. I don't know if I'll get them done, and then we're going to learn something from Lockheed Launcher, because, you know, we learned from 9/11 what to do with our security. We learned from, you know, Sandy. So something will come. It'll be better in the medical community. Back to you.
Okay, very good. Once again, AC2GS. Again, whatever you can do constructively to spend the time, you know, you got to kind of look at the glass half full. Infrastructure is solid. Supplies, for the most part, are solid. The only reason there's shortages of things is because people panic buying. They're buying 3 to 5 times what they normally do, so they prematurely emptied supplies locally. But the supply chain is strong, and it's going to be maintained. We have utilities, we have electricity, we have water, we have internet, we have all kinds of things. I mean, the world is so buttoned down that companies like Netflix and such have decreased their streaming rates so that they can stream the same number of bits to a much larger group of people who are watching movies and television shows and what have you. So make the best of a bad situation. I urge everyone not to panic and not to deny. to drive your car in the middle of the road and not veer into either ends of the road. So that's my bit of advice for tonight and for most nights when we're talking about this.